Gracious God, lover of souls, bless the words of my mouth and the meditation of our hearts, for you are our rock and our redeemer. Amen. If you know the joys of meeting an old friend when you haven't seen them in a very long time, you'll know exactly how I was feeling on a train track in Chicago when I was a sophomore in college. I hadn't seen my friend Sarah in over 4 years, and we'd been friends since we were 10. And I was just outside the city of Chicago on a train track with one commuter train standing between me and a great visit with my friend. I'd had a long day of travel by then, so I bought some magazines and a sandwich. And I was leaning up against a column right behind that big yellow line, waiting for the train to come. And the train would arrive in 10 minutes or so. So I'd positioned myself near the spot where I thought the second or the third car would come, so I could jump right in and get a seat. And I was pretty far away from the 14 or so other people who were milling around that same train track. I'd been especially careful to position myself far away from a big, heavy, homeless man. Someone somewhere in his 40s. He had a big winter coat on and a big wool hat shoved down to his eyebrows. And I'd assessed that collection of people pretty quickly as I'd climbed the stairs to the train track. And his big, rough beard, his big, rough self, his big, beefy hands swinging at the side of his body as he stood statically on that train track unnerved me a bit. There was winter sun in Chicago, a buzz of people milling and chatting, so I lost myself in my magazine, relishing the winter sun on the pages, flipping through them, thinking about my friend and all the questions I was going to ask her. I didn't realize something was wrong until it was too late. A shadow fell across my magazine, just as I realized that all the chatter around me had stopped and the train track was now silent. I looked up from my magazine, and there he was, right in front of me, that big, broad, homeless man, staring into my face as if he and I had been in the middle of a conversation. A massive wall of person. I looked up and looked directly into his face and said nothing because I was afraid and I was unsure of what to do. And what felt like a minute was probably just 6 long seconds of silence. While we stared at each other, he swung his big, beefy hands at his side back and forth. And then he brought up one of his clenched fists in front of my face and said, "Here is a quarter. Go buy something nice." And the big hand opened and dropped the quarter into my outstretched hand, which caught it, as if we'd choreographed the whole thing. I stared at that quarter in my palm, and I tried to take it all in as he shuffled off. I managed to say thank you. And then, because the train was coming soon, I ran into the main terminal to that little candy booth that's always there, and I bought a tiny pack of peppermint lifesavers that I would share with my friend when I got to the other side of that journey. It suddenly had become a sober responsibility as well as a joy to be gifted with so much of a person's disposable income all at once. It turns out that joy is an equal opportunity employer. No one is too poor or too homeless or too sad to bring joy to someone else, to offer joy to someone else. He saw an opportunity to give a gift, and he gave it to me. And I was lucky enough to receive it. And I'm not just talking about the quarter. His gift that day has colored my life since. We never know where joy or wisdom will come from. We never know who really understands the power of generosity. We never know who has a brilliant talent for kindness. I'm learning to keep my eyes open and to keep my heart humble. It turns out that sin is also an equal opportunity employer. The beggar found an opportunity to give a gift that day, but the rest of us on the platform found an opportunity for something else, for disinterest or annoyance or self-righteousness. If I hadn't been reading my magazine, I might have moved away when I saw him start towards me, and I would have missed that gift. So it turns out no one is too good or too smart or too successful to be able to avoid sin. We're imperfect, so we sin. But we diminish sin by breaking its grip on us and keeping our eyes open for the grace, the gifts, the quarters, the joy. We try again. Jesus told this parable to some who trusted in themselves that they were righteous and regarded others with contempt. Two men went up to the temple to pray, one a Pharisee and the other a tax collector. The Pharisee, standing by himself, was praying thus, "God, I thank you that I am not like other people, thieves and rogues and adulterers, or even like this tax collector. I fast twice a week, I give a tenth of my income." But the tax collector, standing far off, would not even look up to heaven, but was beating his breast and saying, "God, be merciful to me, a sinner." Jesus said, "I tell you, this man went down to his home justified rather than the other. For all who exalt themselves will be humbled, and all who humble themselves will be exalted." Amen.
Amen.